People use the phrases playing the stock market and, trading stocks. Like, they are exactly the same thing.
Oh, yeah, constantly.
Right. Like, they are totally interchangeable.
Yeah.
But they are not. I mean, if you treat the stock market like a casino when you really should be treating it like a hardware store, you're going to lose your shirt.
You really are. And it is, it's a pervasive conflation, I think, because the venue is identical. You know, you are looking at the exact same ticker symbols on the exact same screens.
Yeah, same apps, same passwords.
Exactly. But blurring the line between the venue itself and the actual activity taking place is, well, it's the primary reason individuals find themselves totally mismanaging their capital.
Which brings us to our focus for today's deep dive. We're looking at this really fascinating guide from the Osul Gamma Investment Platform, and it's titled Bridging the Divide: Long-Term Investing Versus Active Trading.
It's a great piece.
It really is. And the mission here today, for you listening at home or in your car, is to completely shatter the misconception that just because you put money into the market, you're doing the exact same thing as the person sitting next to you.
Right.
And the source material offers this highly effective baseline metaphor.
Yeah.
They basically say, look, the stock market is just a shopping mall.
Yeah, I love that analogy. Think about the physical structure of a mall. It is a centralized location, right? It's got security, it's got lighting, and it has leased storefronts.
With the food court and everything.
Exactly, the whole ecosystem. And the stock market is exactly that. It is the structural platform where buyers and sellers convene to exchange ownership in publicly listed entities.
So it's the building.
It is the architecture. It is absolutely not the activity itself.
Right. And understanding that structure is so critical for anyone listening to this deep dive right now who's, thinking about allocating their own capital.
Oh, 100%.
Because entering this financial mall without a rigorous understanding of your exact financial goals, your time horizon, and honestly, your psychological risk tolerance, I mean, it's reckless.
It's extremely reckless.
Yeah. If you walk through those glass doors and just like mirror the activity of the crowd around you, you risk adopting a strategy that fundamentally clashes with your own life goals. So this deep dive is really about helping you align your financial mindset with your actual everyday reality.
Well said. So let's start with the people actually walking through the doors of this mall, because the Gamma Guide categorizes market participants into two very distinct camps.
Okay, let's break them down.
First, we have the investor. Now, when we examine investing, we are looking at a long-term mechanism. The investor seeks long-term growth, structural stability, and, gradual wealth accumulation over a span of years, if not decades.
Decades, right, not days.
Exactly. They are purchasing equity to actively participate in the company's fundamental economic growth. So they want capital appreciation, compounding growth, and dividend issuance.
So if we apply the mall metaphor here, the investor is essentially a shopper looking for a really high quality winter coat.
That's a perfect way to look at it.
Right, because they intend to use it for a decade. So they aren't just grabbing the first thing they see. They are inspecting the stitching. They are, researching the manufacturer's supply chain and really evaluating the durability of the materials.
Yes. They want to know the intrinsic value of the asset before they commit a single dollar of capital.
Because they're stuck with it.
Yeah.
Well, not stuck, but they plan to keep it.
Right. They are evaluating the underlying fundamentals because their timeline requires that asset to possess inherent enduring value.
Makes sense.
But then you contrast that with the second archetype in the guide, which is the trader. And the trader operates on a completely different temporal
A
plane.
totally different universe.
Yeah, they are entirely focused on rapid short-term returns that are generated by price fluctuations. So they might hold an asset for a few days, a few hours, or quite literally a few minutes.
Minutes. Wow. Okay, so sticking with the mall structure, if the investor is buying the winter coat, the trader is the sneaker flipper.
Oh, yeah, the sneaker flipper.
Yeah, I mean, they aren't buying the shoe for its utility. They don't care about the arch support or like how long the sole will last.
They probably aren't even trying it on.
No, not at all. They are buying a limited edition release, turning around, walking straight out the mall doors, and selling it in the parking lot for a massive markup to someone who just missed the initial drop.
Wait, so the trader doesn't even care about the actual value of the item, just that someone else wants to buy it for more, like 5 minutes later?
Basically, yeah.
See, the sneaker flipper analogy works perfectly for explaining the time frame. But it misses one really crucial element of trading, which is liquidity.
Okay, liquidity. Unpack that.
Well, a sneaker flipper might be stuck holding that physical shoe for a week if the parking lot happens to be empty, right?
Oh, true. If no one's there to buy it, you're just a guy holding a shoebox.
Exactly. But a market trader, especially a scalper, they rely entirely on the ability to dump their asset in milliseconds. So they require a market structure with immense volume, so they are never left holding the bag.
That makes total sense.
Oh.
So the trader strategy isn't just about finding a willing buyer. It's about operating within this highly liquid ecosystem where the exit door is basically always wide open.
Always.
You know, this raises a question for me about the psychological toll that's outlined in the source text.
Ah, yes, the psychology.
Because if an investor is just, you know, ignoring daily price swings because their horizon is 10 years out, their psychological burden seems relatively low. I mean, they could just sleep at night.
Right, they aren't checking their phone every 5 seconds.
Exactly. But the trader, however, is living inside that volatility.
We really are. And the text is very explicit about this psychological divide. Investing demands profound patience. I mean, you have to endure a massive market contraction without liquidating your positions just out of pure fear.
Which is hard to do when everything is flashing red.
It's incredibly hard. But trading, conversely, is described in the guide as an adrenaline-fueled activity.
Adrenaline-fueled.
Yeah, it requires an extreme level of emotional discipline. When you are executing rapid trades amidst violent market swings, you are constantly fighting the basic human instinct to panic.
And because your brain is screaming at you that you're losing money.
Precisely. You have to execute a predefined plan mechanically, regardless of whether a position is bleeding red in that specific moment.
Man, the emotional tax of having to suppress panic responses multiple times a day, that just seems exhausting.
It is not for the faint of heart.
No kidding. So if your goal is a 10-year hold versus a 10-minute hold, the data you use to justify those decisions has to be fundamentally different.
Completely different.
And the guide separates these approaches really cleanly into strategies versus tactics.
Right. So let's examine the investor's playbook first, which, as we touched on, relies entirely on fundamental analysis.
Yeah, the text outlines three core investing strategies. First, there's value investing, where the goal is finding undervalued stocks with long-term potential.
Essentially finding things on sale.
Right. Then there's growth investing, which focuses on companies that are expanding at a faster rate than the broader market. And finally, dividend investing, which targets companies that actually distribute regular cash payouts to their shareholders.
So think about the mechanics required to execute any of those three long-term strategies.
That's a lot of homework.
It's a ton of homework. To find an undervalued stock, you have to analyze macroeconomic trends. You have to scrutinize the company's balance sheet, assess their debt-to-equity ratio, and honestly even evaluate the competence of their executive board.
You really have to look under the hood.
You do. You are calculating the intrinsic value of the business and essentially placing a bet that the broader market will eventually recognize and reflect that value in the share price.
So you are evaluating the health of the actual physical business, what they make, who they hire. But when we shift over to the trader's tactics and the guide list day trading, swing trading, and scalping, the focus completely detaches from the company's fundamental health.
Entirely. It detaches entirely. Day trading involves opening and closing positions within a single trading session, mostly to avoid overnight market exposure.
So you go to sleep flat.
Exactly. No open bets while you sleep. Swing trading stretches that timeline out just slightly, holding positions for a few days to capture anticipated market momentum.
Okay, catching a wave over a week or so.
Right. And then scalping is the most extreme tactic. That is executing dozens or even hundreds of trades a single day just to capture fractional profits.
Okay, wait, I want to break down the mechanics of scalping specifically for the listener because it sounds crazy.
It is a little crazy.
If a trader is holding a position for mere seconds, I mean, they aren't waiting for a press release or a quarterly earnings report to drive the price up. How are they extracting a profit in such a microscopic window of time?
So they are generally exploiting what's called the bid-ask spread.
The bid-ask spread. Okay, explain that.
Well, the bid is the highest price a buyer is willing to pay for a stock, and the ask is the lowest price a seller is willing to accept.
Okay.
There is basically always a tiny gap between those two numbers. A scalper provides liquidity by buying at the bid and immediately selling at the ask.
Wait, really? So they are making money on that tiny little gap?
Yes. They might make a fraction of a single cent per share.
A fraction of a cent.
But when they leverage massively large capital and execute that exact maneuver hundreds of times a day, those fractional gains accumulate into real profit.
So traders are basically, they're just skimming the friction of the market itself.
Exactly. They are trading the math, not the company.
Which means they are entirely ignoring what the company actually builds or does. Like, they don't care if the company manufactures life-saving medical devices or if they just produce literal garbage.
They could not care less.
They are solely analyzing price movements using technical analysis.
Right. And the source text highlights the specific tools required for this kind of tactical warfare. You need specialist technical analysis platforms, the relative strength index or RSI moving averages, and volume trends.
Let's unpack the RSI because it is mentioned frequently in financial media, but rarely actually explained mechanically.
That's very true.
How does a trader use the RSI to determine when to enter or exit a highly volatile position? Like, what are they actually looking at?
So the RSI is a momentum oscillator.
An oscillator, okay.
It measures the speed and the magnitude of recent price changes to evaluate whether a stock is overvalued or undervalued in the short term. And it is plotted on a scale from 0 to 100.
0 to 100. Got it.
Mechanically, if the RSI crosses above 70, the asset is traditionally considered overbought, which means the upward momentum might be totally exhausted and a price correction like a sudden drop is imminent.
Oh, I see.
Conversely, if it falls below 30, it is considered oversold, which signals a potential upward bounce is coming.
Wow. So they aren't looking at the fundamental value of the item on the shelf at all.
Not even a little bit.
They're tracking the momentum of the crowd rushing toward or running away from that shelf. If the RSI hits 80, the trader assumes the crowd is running out of breath and prepares to short the stock.
Exactly. And they combine that metric with moving averages, which basically smooth out the chaotic minute-by-minute price data to reveal the actual trend line underneath all the noise.
Right, to see the forest through the trees.
Yes. But, you know, the text adds one more required tool for a trader, and it is entirely psychological. It explicitly states that trading requires guts.
Guts. See, finding an investment platform guide that lists guts as an official prerequisite is highly unusual.
It really is. You don't see that in many prospectuses.
You know, but logically it makes sense. If you are relying on probability metrics like an RSI, you are never operating with absolute certainty. You are basically operating on the probability that historical patterns will repeat themselves.
Right.
And executing a trade with massive leverage based on just a slight mathematical edge, I mean, that requires a huge degree of nerve.
It requires nerves of steel because the risk is magnified immensely. The quick trades could net substantial gains, sure, but the exact same mechanics can trigger catastrophic losses if the market momentum suddenly defies those technical indicators.
Because indicators are just indicators. They aren't crystal balls.
Exactly. The volatility is literally the engine of their profit. And this brings us to the crucial importance of market infrastructure.
The arena itself.
Yes. The tools you deploy and the specific risks you expose yourself to are entirely dependent on the specific arena you choose to operate within.
Because the mall isn't just one homogeneous floor plan. It has different wings.
It does.
And the guide transitions from these massive global benchmarks, you know, like the New York Stock Exchange and the NASDAQ, to a detailed look at a local arena. The Saudi Stock Exchange, known as Tadawul.
Right. And Tadawul serves as an excellent case study here in how regulatory frameworks actively dictate market behavior.
Okay, so how does that work?
Well, before we look at the trading floors themselves, we have to look at the regulatory authority overseeing them, the Capital Market Authority or CMA.
Okay, the CMA. The text notes that the CMA's purpose is to ensure transparency, fairness, and investor protection.
Right.
But, you know, for the listener, what does that protection look like mechanically? How does a regulatory body enforce transparency in a way that actually impacts a trader or an investor sitting at their laptop?
It really comes down to enforced disclosure and extremely rigorous auditing standards.
So paperwork. Lots of paperwork.
Tons of it. The CMA dictates exactly what a publicly listed company must reveal to the public, how frequently they must report their financials, and they set the strict penalties for insider trading or market manipulation.
Oh, okay. So it's the rule book.
It's the rule book with teeth. This regulatory baseline is what allows an investor to actually trust the balance sheet they are reading.
Because if they lie on the balance sheet, the CMA comes after them.
Exactly.
But the infrastructure of Tadawul isn't just flap, right? The guide highlights a really crucial structural division within the exchange itself, the main market versus the no-move parallel market.
Yes. And this division perfectly illustrates the correlation between risk, regulation, and a participant's strategy.
Break that down for us.
So the main market is the primary arena. It is designed for well-established, highly capitalized companies. To list on the main market, a corporation must meet incredibly strict regulatory thresholds, very demanding listing rules, and exhaustive disclosure requirements.
So if you are an investor, putting your capital into the main market is basically akin to investing in a publicly audited, highly scrutinized Fortune 500 company.
That's a great comparison.
Right, because the compliance costs are massive, the quarterly reports are microscopic in their detail, and the corporate governance is highly structured. You know, you're booking a ticket on a heavily regulated commercial airline.
Safe, predictable, regulated.
Exactly. You have structural safety and transparency, but, you know, you probably aren't going to see a 300% return in a single quarter.
No, you definitely won't. The heavy regulation naturally compresses extreme volatility. And that institutional stability is precisely what the long-term investor is seeking.
But then we look at the other wing of the mall, the Nomu parallel market.
Right.
Nomu. The guide describes Nomu as a platform for smaller, newer companies, offering more flexible routes to capital.
And flexible capital is the operative phrase there.
How so?
The mechanics of Nomu require much lower market capitalization minimums and significantly less stringent disclosure requirements compared to the main market.
Okay, so less red tape.
A lot less. It is designed to let emerging young companies access public funding without being totally crushed by the compliance overhead that's required for main market listing.
So, to contrast my Fortune 500 analogy, operating in the Nomu market is closer to handing capital to a brilliant but completely unproven startup founder who's just working out of a garage.
Yes. Or, to use your airplane analogy, it's like renting an experimental, nimble aircraft.
Oh, I like that.
Right. It offers incredible flexibility, and it can do maneuvers a commercial jet can't, but you absolutely need to know what you are doing because it's dangerous.
The potential upside is astronomical because the company is in its infancy. But the regulatory safety net is much thinner. You just have less data on their financials, and the risk of catastrophic failure is exponentially higher.
Precisely. And because these are smaller companies with lower market caps, their shares are inherently less liquid.
Ah, right. Less buyers and sellers.
Exactly. That lack of liquidity, combined with the flexible regulatory structure, breeds massive volatility.
Which means these two different arenas naturally attract our two very different shoppers.
Naturally. The investor, prioritizing stability and compounding growth, gravitates toward the strict disclosures of the main market.
They want the winter coat with the warranty.
Yes. But the trader, seeking that high-octane environment where prices swing wildly on a daily basis, they find immense opportunity in the volatility of markets like Nomu.
They're actively trading structural stability for rapid price movements.
They need the movement to make a profit.
It is entirely about matching the structural arena to your specific operational game plan.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as the Gemma blog points out, neither of these paths is objectively better or superior to the other.
No, not at all.
Because if there were a singular, mathematically perfect way to extract money from the market without any risk, the entire system would just collapse overnight as everyone exploited it.
The market requires both types of participants to function.
It's an ecosystem.
It really is. The investors provide the long-term capital that allows companies to build actual physical factories and hire workforces. And the traders provide the daily liquidity that allows the market to actually operate efficiently day to day.
So the question isn't which method is better. Mm-hmm. The question you have to ask yourself is which method you are actually equipped to execute. If you are sitting there analyzing your own financial trajectory, you have to establish your baseline. You know, are you looking for a self-managing, low-risk, slow-growth approach? Are you willing to conduct the boring fundamental research, purchase a high-quality asset, and just patiently endure a decade of market cycles?
Or are you wired for the high-octane, fast-paced environment? Do you possess the real emotional discipline to analyze RSI charts, execute hundreds of scalping trades, and stomach daily volatility without panicking?
Recognizing the psychological divide between those two paths is basically the only way to actually protect your capital.
It is. But, you know, there is an underlying dynamic here that I think complicates this choice for the modern participant.
Oh, what's that?
Well, we have established that investing requires immense patience, while trading demands emotional detachment from sudden volatility. Right.
Right.
Just look at the interface of any modern financial application on your phone right now.
Oh, wow.
We are operating in an era totally dominated by instant push notifications, highly gamified interfaces, and bright, flashing red and green indicators that are literally designed to trigger dopamine responses in our brains.
The confetti when you make a trade.
Exactly, the confetti. The structural design of modern access points heavily favors immediate, impulsive action over patient, long-term observation.
That is a fascinating point.
You really have to ask yourself, is the modern financial shopping mall secretly designed to turn patient investors into reactive traders without them even realizing it?
Oh, wow.
Are your long-term financial goals genuinely dictating your actions? Or is the gamified adrenaline of the app on your phone slowly taking the wheel?
When the mall itself is actively flashing neon signs directly into your pocket, you know, demanding a reaction to a mere 2% drop, maintaining a 10-year horizon requires active psychological resistance.
It really does. It's an uphill battle.
It forces you to question whether your portfolio reflects your strategy or just your reaction time. Well, thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Before you allocate another dollar, review your own objectives, genuinely assess your true risk tolerance, and make absolutely sure the arena you are playing in actually aligns with the outcome you want. Until next time, keep analyzing the underlying mechanics, and we will catch you on the next deep dive.